This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio.
We're about to learn a lot about China and doing business in China from a guy who is on the ground floor of the Chinese e-commerce, finance, and media company Alibaba. Duncan Clark heads BDA China, an investment advisory firm based in Beijing. He worked with Alibaba's CEO Jack Ma from early on. Clark has a book out this week called Alibaba, The House That Jack Ma Built. Mr. Clark, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So you were Jack Ma's right hand when this company was getting going. Where did it didn't start in a garage like in Palo Alto. What was the scene?
Yes, I would say I was one of his right hands. He had 18 actually co-founding the company, including his wife. And when I walked into that apartment just a few months actually after they'd founded it, it was a very small apartment, very stuffed with people, very hot. And when I remember using the restroom and actually seeing two mugs stuffed with toothbrushes, which indicated that people were there pretty much 24/7. So Alibaba started as a business-to-business e-commerce company. It wasn't really thinking about selling into China or even to consumers in the U.S. It was really helping the companies that are based in the same province as Alibaba in Zhejiang province. And I have a whole chapter on Zhejiang. It's a very important place. And so what Jack did was set up a platform to help small and medium-sized companies sell to the global markets.
And so with that going on, you know, it's a startup company. And there was a culture for startup even then?
Yeah. And actually, it was Jack's third company. You know, the most interesting thing about success is not success. It's failure, to be honest. And he'd failed twice before, first at a translation company, which actually still exists, but had never really scaled very much. His second business was called China Pages, which was like the idea of bringing the yellow pages to the internet. And that kind of got taken over by the government. And Jack ended up having to move to Beijing and work with the government. So his third time lucky really was Alibaba. So it was, you know, it was still early days for what he was trying to do, but there were other internet companies in China that were actually already scaling much faster than him.
But that's interesting about the culture there for entrepreneurship, that you could fail and you still could attract money.
Absolutely. I mean, the money was coming in from the West, actually. There wasn't any native or local venture capital. Alibaba's first investor was Goldman Sachs. In fact, it was actually my classmate. I used to work in banking at Morgan Stanley, and my classmate moved to Goldman. She invested. She took a big risk on Jack. But she had the same impression that I had when I first met him in that small apartment was, this guy is just out of left field. I mean, he has this combination of chutzpah and blarney, I think is the best way to describe it. He's got the gift of the gab. His parents were storytellers. I've seen grown investors cry in rooms that he's addressed in Chinese and in English. And yet he had this vision, which should have seemed crazy and actually was crazy. People called him Crazy Jack. And yet, actually, if you look back, he's really stuck to his ambitions and created this huge platform.
As a expat working in mainland China for these couple of decades, you've seen how the government has a different relationship with private business. I mean, obviously, radically different history. How did Jack Ma, how did you, how did Alibaba figure out how to flourish in this very different environment?
It is very different. Sometimes I think it's like a parallel universe. As you know, today, famously, the Great Firewall stops you from accessing lots of sites. And I think in terms of Jack's opportunity, he was born in the right place. He was not born into wealth or power and famously, you know, had very difficult early circumstances. But he was born in Zhejiang province, the home of entrepreneurship in China. And the other thing was he had an early understanding of the internet because he went to the U.S. Very early on in 1995 and actually went online in Seattle, actually. So Jack typed the word China into an early, I think it was Mosaic browser, and there was really nothing. It was about Chinese cups and things like that. And so he had this epiphany moment that actually, you know, there was really nothing on the internet in China. And he launched a business, the China Pages business, to take advantage of this opportunity. But his first internet business really failed. Jack ended up selling out that business for not very much. He moved to Beijing to build a website for the Ministry of Commerce. And that is where he met Jerry Yang. So Jerry Yang, when he came to Beijing, the co-founder of Yahoo, fast forward to 2005, and Jerry Yang invested in Alibaba, $1 billion. So he's street smart. He makes his own opportunities. Famously, Jack says, fall in love with the government, but don't marry them. But it's true that behind everything is the Communist Party. So understanding what they are looking for and actually giving them enough without giving them the business is what it's all about. China is trying to rebalance its economy away from the made-in-China past to the purchased in China future. So consumers are actually beginning to buy not only products, but also services from Chinese providers. And to some extent, Alibaba is moving the fulcrum in this rebalancing. China has huge problems with pollution, excess inventory, steel. Just look at these issues. The Chinese government understands that they have to move forward to a consumer-driven future. But that actually doesn't happen overnight. To actually help consumers spend more and save less, the government has to focus on important things like reforming social welfare, pensions, labor markets. So it's really a generational fix. But in the meantime, I think Alibaba is a bright and shiny object that the government can point to say, look, this is the future.
And sometimes you run up against a state-owned enterprise. It's pretty much the government in business, and it can be opposite you. It can be competition.
The state-owned enterprises are feeling some pressure, particularly the banks, because Alibaba today is not just about e-commerce. It's increasingly moving into finance and also entertainment. So in finance, the Chinese banks have long had a monopoly. They're all state-owned. Suddenly, when Jack launched a money market fund a few years ago, you could sort of transfer money and get really good rates of interest. We had overnight, within 6 months, we had the second largest money market fund in the world. So you had $100 billion flow into this account. That's actually very small compared to the vast reserves of the Chinese state banks. But they never experienced such a thing. And they've been using regulation to push back. Jack is actually launching a bank, an online bank, which he is using facial recognition technology to register accounts. This is another breakthrough. But again, the banks are pushing back. The same in entertainment and the media. Jack is investing in media, both in China and overseas. And again, the state has long had a monopoly on those things.
On this notion of e-commerce in the United States is the dessert, but it's the main course in China, I'm trying to get a sort of practical sense of that. I guess it would be in the United States, if you want to buy some headphones, you can go locally to a Best Buy and purchase it, or you can go online. You're saying that if you're in a Chinese town that does have an internet connection, you might not be able to buy the headphones locally. You got to use the internet in that case.
Absolutely. I mean, and having been an early shopper in China, I've lived there for over 20 years, the experience of retail was really pretty awful, frankly. You would walk into typically a state-owned store where basically the staff really weren't interested in you at all. You were just getting in their way. And if you did find something that you wanted to buy, they then instruct you to go, 500 yards the other side of the store to pay for it, come back with 5 slips, which they stamp, reluctantly then hand over the goods. So that's the sort of state tradition to retail. They just didn't care. Then we had the boom of real estate developers suddenly very excited about shopping malls. But if you go into a lot of these shopping malls in China, they're actually empty because these are showcase Louis Vuitton and Prada, where they just market basically the brand. But actually, Chinese buy them overseas because it's much cheaper to buy in Hong Kong, Japan, here in the U.S. So, the real estate developers were just focused on the land underneath. They didn't really care about the shoppers. And then you're right, in rural areas or in the fourth or fifth tier cities, there was really no choice. So retail was never an efficient experience, whereas in the U.S., we've had decades, thanks to, Walmart and others, which themselves disrupted, the original department stores in Chicago, Marshall Fields, et cetera. So, China is to some extent leapfrogging. It's going straight to not only online, but mobile retail in a big way. And the convenience, think if you're a mother at home, for example, having milk formula, which you'll probably buy imported through Alibaba because you don't trust the local product, having it delivered to your home, often within an hour. I mean, Amazon in the U.S. has Amazon Fresh for delivering milk and so on. Alibaba is in far more cities than Amazon is and is expanding more rapidly. Alibaba has competition from a company called JD and others. So they're not without rivals, but they've really kind of opened the market and opened people's ideas to the power of being a consumer.
Alibaba within China has some critics, you say. Internationally, it has some critics. One of the things that critics focus on is you can buy a lot of counterfeit merchandise on Alibaba, and they're trying to work on this?
They are. So there are really two major platforms that Alibaba operates. The first is called Taobao, and that's where small individuals can actually sell whatever they want, or small traders. And there you do, frankly, have a problem of fakes. Now, the problem is going down in the sense that more and more customers are demanding the real thing and able to pay for it. But the second platform, which is Tmall, is actually where brands sell directly to customers. So they open a store, it might be a high-end brand like Coach or Burberry's, and there they're selling the real thing. And what's important is that Tmall, the second platform of Alibaba, generates commissions for Alibaba. So on Taobao, Alibaba only makes money from advertising. So these merchants actually buy advertising to promote themselves on the platform. Whereas on Tmall, they actually take a percentage. So to some extent, the solution to pollution is dilution. So by adding more authentic products, Alibaba hopes that customers will buy the real thing. They have another problem, though, on Tmall, is that people will actually ship empty boxes to prove that they're very successful as merchants because that helps their rankings. So,
really?
Yeah, it's called brushing, and we see a problem that Alibaba has to investigate constantly. And people do question, do they really crack down on this? Because ultimately, if people are shipping stuff and they're making a commission, there's a conflict of interest. And literally on 11/11, which is November the 11th, which is called Singles Day in China, and Alibaba sort of appropriated that festival. 11-11 because it symbolizes, you know, single people, 1-1-1-1. A lot of people are single. More people are single than in happy, you know, Valentine's Day relationships. And Alibaba figured that retail therapy is great, particularly in a nation of the one-child policy, the excess of male to female, all these factors. So Alibaba created a festival called Singles Day. And on that day, we've seen just ridiculous amounts of sales, far more than what we see here on Cyber Monday. And the reason is that basically people liked, who doesn't like a deal? And Alibaba does everything they can to deliver stuff overnight, and they have, you know, over a million couriers working for them on that day. So that is the war room, and I was there actually this year at the I was there last year at the November 11th festival. It's like being in the sort of shape, or no, it's like being in NORAD. You know, they have a map of China. They're showing real time all the deliveries, purchases, the financial transactions. It's an amazing
experience. And a million couriers.
At least a million. I think 1.3 million on that day alone. And actually, in this town or in this province of Zhejiang, three of the top four courier companies in China are all from the same village. So it's as though FedEx and UPS and another were all from one village. In fact, often interrelated. So Alibaba and Zhejiang, really, to understand China, I think it's really important to understand Zhejiang province and the entrepreneurial revolution. Because yes, you know, China is a tale of two countries in a way, not the Taiwan mainland thing. I mean, you know, the state and the private. The state sector in China is what we think of increasingly, or the state is how we think of China, but actually it's the private sector that is really driving job creation, growth, innovation. And the interplay between these two forces is what this book is about.
Duncan Clark heads BDA China, an investment advisory firm based in Beijing. The book is called Alibaba, The House That Jack Ma Built. Duncan, thank you.
Thank you.